going into more issues from his campaign, his campaign platform, particularly talking about the transportation issues in this city, and a few other major pressing issues. So, Philip, in the 1 minute that we have left, if folks out there are inspired by what you're talking about, how can they find more information about you? Where can they find ways to get involved?
Yeah, so first off, thank you for your time and in interviewing me. This has been a pleasure. So people can start by looking on my website, actually. It's www.philip4portland2018.com. So philip4portland2018.com. That goes into my platform, my goals, how people can donate, just things that I want to accomplish. All of that information is right there, easily accessible to see. And then I am also hosting a kickoff party on October 22nd. It is going to be a smaller sort of event. I really want to focus on the core of the community and have just a small number of people there, and then hopefully let it sort of grow and bubble from there. And so that'll be the beginning of my journey, and hopefully people come along with me.
Awesome. Well, once again, Philip J. Wolf, thank you so much for being here. He is running for City Council seat number 2 against sitting Commissioner Nick Fish. Join us exactly 1 month from tonight, Labor Radio, the third Monday of November. We will embark on part 2 of this interview. I am Michael Cathcart. Thank you for joining us for Labor Radio. Have a great night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Clean Water Act Turns 45. The celebration will be held on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. at the Lorewood Public House and Brewery in Portland. The Clean Water Act has kept huge amounts of pollution out of our waterways and made significant progress towards the vision of fishable, drinkable, and swimmable waterways. Environment Oregon will be celebrating the Act's 45th anniversary with drinks, appetizers, and speakers. Again, that's the Clean Water Act Turns 45. Celebration on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. at the Laurelwood Public House and Brewery, 5115 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Amados hermanos, compañeros y compañeras, ustedes saben y ustedes reconocen que son puertorriqueños, ¿verdad? ¿Verdad?
Yes.
Ahora vamos a enseñarle a esta gente ahora que nosotros nunca los olvidamos que somos boricua.
Ahora sí. Sí, eran bonitos. Me encanta la música. Música criolla. Sigue, amados hermanos. Que viva la isla de Puerto Rico en mi corazón. Me siento bien orgulloso, amados hermanas, compañeros y compañeras, que Puerto Rico es nuestra isla y nunca se olvide de eso, ¿entiendes? Imagínate, mira esa música tan bonita. Mira para allá, música criolla, boricua. Ah, ahora tengo ganas de comerme un plato, un buen plato de arroz y habichuela. Ay, bonito, me encanta la música puertorriqueña. Me encanta. Ahora mismo estoy pensando de esa isla tan bonita, las palmas de coco, el yunque, ay, y el mar, y las mujeres, ay, Dios, tan bonitas que son esas aquí. Escrituras. Que el Señor bendiga eso. Ay, le doy gracias, Señor. Le doy gracias que soy puertorriqueño. Ay, sí. Mm-hmm.
yo tengo una isla en mi corazón, y esta isla mía está sufriendo mucho. Viva Puerto Rico libre, viva Puerto Rico libre, viva Puerto Rico libre, viva Puerto Rico libre.
Understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo, and I'm here with filmmaker Mary Knight. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
Mary and I were both involved in a program over at Coffee Creek Prison, the Women's Spiritual Book Club. I know a lot of the insiders at Coffee Creek at that time. And I was really excited to learn recently that Mary has kept up with some of the women at Coffee Creek and has actually been working on a film about one of the women there. So let's first, Mary, could you just introduce yourself and say a little bit about yourself?
My name is Mary Knight. I'm a retired social worker. I did social work for about 25 years, and then I decided to do filmmaking full-time. I've made a feature film, a fun feature film, PG-13 comedy, and I've also made a film about my first marriage, which involved domestic violence, and a film about my childhood. I'm a survivor of extreme child abuse. My projects now are about Robin Drown, who is an inmate at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility.
And how did you first come to be familiar with Robin's story? And maybe tell us a little bit about who Robin is.
When we had the book club in the prison, there were 12 women from the inside, Emma and I being two of them, and 12 women from the outside, Emma and I being two of them, and 12 women from the inside. Robin Drown was one of those women. I told about some severe abuse that happened to me when I was 6 years old, and she came up afterwards and said, "I want to apologize to you on behalf of your mother. My mother is deceased." And it was so heartfelt. And she recognized how much her children were hurt, and she wanted to let me know she recognized that. And it was just such a sweet thing to do. And she hugged me. And later she said, "I quit hugging you so you wouldn't get in trouble, because you can't hug an inmate for too long." As though I could get into so much trouble. I mean, here I'm from the outside. What's going to happen to me? And after I completed the film about my childhood, I contacted Robin and asked her if she'd like me to do a film on her.
That's great. Just for those who aren't familiar, Coffee Creek is the only women's state prison in the state of Oregon. Coffee Creek houses about 3,000 inmates, and it's broken up into three levels of security. It's got low, medium, and high. And the wing that Mary and I both volunteered in, maybe still do, I still volunteer there, is the high end, the high security end. And that's for people who are, a lot of them are lifers. So they're people who are in for pretty long sentences.
Yes.
And the group that we're in is the Women's Spiritual Book Club, which is run by Chaplain Emily Bro, who's a member of our Unitarian Universalist congregation, a Unitarian minister in her own right, and also the prison chaplain. And the women at Coffee Creek really admire Reverend Bro and, you know, really look to her for leadership and guidance in a lot of ways. And she's able to create these really special kind of environments where outsiders can come in and really get to know insiders and, you know, see people one-on-one. So that's kind of the context of how this all happens and where Coffee Creek is.
Yes, and Reverend Bro, Emily Bro, is one of several chaplains there, and the inmates call her Chappie.
Yes, Chappie.
And I'm no longer a volunteer at the prison. I'm in order to visit Robin, I need to be on her visitor list, and you can't be a volunteer and be on visitor list. So that's what I'm doing. I visit Robin on a regular basis, and I've gotten to know her better as I've been making the films. Robin is in for 20 and a half years for what her husband did to their children. He is in for 29 years. Robin was abused. It was domestic violence. And he delegated some of the physical discipline to her. So she was told if she would hit and beat her children, then she had more control. That way they weren't beat as viciously. And when she wouldn't do it to his standards, then they were beat much worse. So in that context, with limited choices and with not recognizing some of the choices she may really have had, she was involved in the abuse of her children. And she did many things to try to make the life of her children better, but she didn't leave. And it has taken me some time to understand why she didn't leave. And I understand it partly because I was in a verbally abusive marriage. It was not physically abusive. And I had a master's degree in social work. I had a way to support myself. But I didn't realize it, because when you're in a marriage like that, you don't recognize your options, which is something that happened with Robin. Also, she did try to leave, and there were people from her church who she stayed with who told her to go back. Also, her ex-husband was very violent, and some women and children die in the process of leaving. And I still, with all I know about the situation, don't know but that that would have happened. Her ex-husband was very convincing of his innocence. The first film I made is called Mother's Day, A Trip to Prison, and it is available on my YouTube channel. I will be showing it at Women in Prison Conference. It's about Judah, Robin's 20-year-old son, who is in the Navy. I took him, I went and picked him up because he needed a ride. When he was on leave, he wanted to visit his mom. So I picked him up at where he was staying at his home in Salem, and drove him to Wilsonville. And he got to hug his mom for the first time since he was 11 years old. Oh, wow. Judah is a terrific young man, and he was very candid on camera, and he told what the abuse was like. He told about witnessing his mother being abused, and he told about why he wants his mom out. He wants his mom out of prison because he hopes to have children, and he wants her out so she can visit his children as they're growing up. He has no reservations about her being around his children, and he is a protective person. I asked him, would he ever let his father be in contact with his children? And he said no. He immediately said, no, I would not do that. And it's his understanding that his father has not changed and that his father doesn't think he did anything wrong. Robin is very sorry that her children were so abused. And the abuse was physical. It was not sexual abuse. It was physical abuse that supposedly was disciplinary, but it was vicious, extreme beatings. The beatings that occurred when Robin was not at home were much worse, and the children were severely abused.
That's a lot of the stories that women shared with us in the group that we were in prison, and a lot of things that I've learned since lead me to believe that a lot of the women are in prison because they were doing things they thought they would be supporting their boyfriends or their husbands, or they would please them, or somehow they got wrapped into experiences that their partners led them to that they may not have otherwise gotten involved in. So that abuse that you're talking about, I think, is common in many of the stories of women at Coffee Creek.
Yes, yes. And it's another interview I've done and a second film. So I'll be showing two films at the Women in Prison Conference about Robin. And the other one is titled simply Free Robin Drown. And it won't be available. We will be submitting it to film festivals. It will be a work in progress showing at Women in Prison Conference. So it won't be available on YouTube for a while. There is a trailer for it, though. But in it, I interview Robin, and she talks about how she never considered killing him, and yet, you know, she is in prison for this, for really longer, a 20 and a half year sentence is longer than many people are in for manslaughter, you know, when someone was killed. And she, I interview her parents. And I guess I really suspected her parents when she's in prison for, you know, for the child abuse of her children. I really liked her parents. And what I like about filmmaking is it lets the audience see and judge for themselves. So her parents are interviewed on camera, and they talk about what Robin was like before she met this man she married. And she was just a hardworking, excellent student, so many talents. It shows how much destruction can happen. Robin's husband has been diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, and in the second film I'm mentioning, Free Robin Drown, I also interview one of her other sons, David. And David is also a wonderful young man, and he's gay, and he says on camera that his father would have killed him had he known he was gay. This isn't like theoretical. He definitely, this would have happened. And his father would say things to him. He was the scapegoat in the family. His father would say things to him like, I know that that if God tells me to kill you, I will. I'm just waiting for a sign from God as to whether or not to kill you. And David was the one who reported the abuse to their rabbi. And that's how the police got involved. That's how the situation changed. David really enjoys visiting his mom. And they talk on the phone quite a bit. They have a good relationship. And I said, you know, what David has decided that when his father gets out of prison, his father can live with him because he won't have any other place, which is pretty amazing considering that his father really literally almost killed him. And I talked to David and his partner, Casey, and I said, how do you feel about that? You know, and Casey's like, well, you know, David told me that's what we would need to do, and I will do that after, you know, we will do that after he's been in prison the 29 years. And I said, well, what about if Robin needed a place to stay? And you could see the difference in the body language of David's partner. He was like, oh, yeah, yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, she could stay with us.
Wow. So, Mary, how did it feel to you personally to be doing these two films about this family? I mean, what did it mean to you personally as a filmmaker? Why tell these stories?
I really want her to get out of prison. And what it would take is the governor commuting her sentence. So I really want to get word out, because we need a lot of people signing a petition to free Robin. And she has been going through the appeal process. There is two more chances for appeal. One, can't remember the technical term for, that's coming up soon. And after that, the only thing left is federal habeas corpus. The most likely is for the governor to see that this woman was severely abused. Her kids want her out. It is a punishment to her children to keep her in prison. And her parents are getting older, and I mean, they want her out. But what is especially sad is that her children, who were abused, are now not getting to see her except for in a prison waiting room. And I'm not speaking, not all her children are visiting her at this time. Some of her children were placed in adoptive homes, and it's my understanding they're good adoptive homes. Those children are not yet grown. There are five children who are not yet adults. But Judah and his older siblings want to see their mom. And I talked to one of Robin's daughters, and she comes to see Robin. She brings her kids. And I said, well, what would be different if your mom got out of prison? She said, well, it wouldn't change my life as much as my kids. My daughter is, you know, 5 years old now, and my husband and I have decided we're not going to tell our daughter where her grandma is until she specifically asks questions, but she's getting to the age she has to go through a metal detector to see her grandma. And I just want her to have a normal life. Robin's daughter, Nadia, is just a wonderful parent, and she wants good for her own children. But then I also said, well, I kept asking her, well, how would your life be different? And she said, well, I want my mom to teach me how to sew. She teaches people how to sew in prison. She's in charge of the textiles program, and she teaches inmates how to sew. She said, I don't know how to sew, and I want my mom to teach me. And I said, well, how long, if Robin got out of prison, how long of a visit would be, you know, as long as you would want a visit from your mom? And she said, my husband and I are looking at property now. We are looking at property that would be big enough that we could have a house and then another house on the same property. So acreage with two houses on it. And the second house would be for my mother. And I know, you know, I have brothers and sisters and she'd want to visit them too, but I would want her there as much as possible. So she really wants to see her mom. Mm-hmm. So it feels really rewarding. It feels like it feels like the right thing to do, to work toward true justice for this situation. And I do want to say Robin has been in prison 9 years already. So I just don't think that it's a wise use of tax dollars to keep her in for another 11 and a half years. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'll say about Robin is she told me that there was someone who she had met who did a ministry at the prison who had said that she would hire her when she got out. And so I interviewed that person. And sure enough, she said, yeah, I will. I hire many people. She works for Ramona Matheny. I'm not saying her last name right, but she works for All-Star she owns All-Star Labor. It's a felon-friendly company, and she it's a employment agent.
Going back to Robin's sewing ability, I've seen some of Robin's work. It's really amazing.
Oh, she's excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in the film Mother's Day, A Trip to Prison, you'll be able to see, when you watch that film, the teddy bear she made. Cool. So when her son came to visit her, she made him a custom-made teddy bear. It is a sailor teddy bear. So it's wearing the Navy uniform. The teddy bear has its own special award. And it's just beautiful. That film, by the way, is just 7 minutes long. So it's really easy just to go onto YouTube and watch it. Mother's Day, A Trip to Prison. And the other film is 10 minutes long. So my goal is to make several short films about different aspects of Robin's life and her family's life.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes left. Let's talk about the Women in Prison Conference for just a minute. So you're presenting at the Women in Prison Conference. Do you know when your film will be shown at the conference?
At noon on Sunday of the conference.
Okay. At noon. Is it part of a panel?
No, it's me and Emily Ellison, who Emily is previously represented Robin in one of her appeals. So Emily is a criminal attorney.
Oh, great. So you'll be talking about Robin's case in addition to showing the film.
Yes, Emily's going to use Robin's case as a way to illustrate how